Today's guest is Alan Freestone, who is a homeopath in the UK that specialises in autism, PANS, PANDAS, and using homeopathy to treat the chronic effects of viruses, bacteria, and fungi. Alan is also the founder of the newly established Hahnemann Clinic and the founder of the Facebook group Homeopathic Practice Building, which I highly recommend all homeopaths join if you're interested in having a thriving practice. Alan has had many attacks from skeptics over the years because of his work in the field of autism. It really breaks my heart when I hear these stories of homeopaths who are doing incredible work to heal children from autism and other complex health issues, and instead of their work being celebrated, there are concerted efforts to try and silence them. And I'm so glad to hear that Alan hasn't bowed to the pressure and that he is continuing to do amazing work in his community and worldwide. If your child has a complex health issue and you are anywhere in the world and would like to see Alan online, then visit www.alanfreestone.com. That's A-L-A-N. FreeStone.com. Thanks for listening.
Welcome to the Homeopathy Hangout, where we discuss all things homeopathy from around the world. And now my mum and your host, Eugenie Kruger.
Hello, homies, and a very warm welcome to Homeopathy Hangouts. Today, we get to hang out with Alan Freestone from the UK. Welcome, Alan.
Hello, everybody. Nice to meet you again, Eugenie.
Yes, it's nice to have a chat again. I've had the privilege of being interviewed by you in your homeopathic practice building group. So it's nice to have you on the other side this time, getting some questions fired at you. So tell our listeners, Alan, how were you first introduced to homeopathy?
Hello, everybody. So my story is probably a bit strange. I found a homeopathic book, and well, it was actually the Organon, in the school library. I don't know how, just random, I don't know how it was there. And I started reading it, and the first page is just hits you like, the purpose of healing is da da da. And I was like, yep, I want to do this. It just seemed so right. I can't really explain it. But then I went and did other things and joined the Air Force and had lots of adventures. And then it was after that, I was deciding, right, I'm going to retrain. I'm going to do something now. And I was probably going to go and do like an engineering degree or something, not because I was really passionate about it, but just because I trade for money. And then I remembered it, just homeopathy came back into my consciousness. And funnily, I had traveled around years and I had always kept an Organon in my little collection of books that I would cart around with myself. And when I decided to do that, I was like, yep, that's it. Because I wanted to do something, not for money, but for, it was like, no, that's my, I don't want to say calling, or, but it was the thing that I wanted to do, irrespective of whether it was the right career move. So then I went and studied part-time. So I was still working as an engineer, as a contractor for the military, but I was studying part-time at the Center for Homeopathic Education.
Nice.
Which I feel really lucky to have to have gone to. I literally went, I'll pick that one. I didn't know anything. I didn't look at the other colleges. And I went along for an open day, and I think the academic year started the next week. And that was it. I was like, and I said to Marcus, I think you've interviewed Marcus Fernandez, haven't you? And I said to him in my interview, I was like, I want to make a living at this. I want to, that was his whole thing about this. It should be, you know, so I was like, yeah, I want to come here, because it wasn't wishy-washy, airy-fairy. Mm-hmm. It was like, no, you can build a successful practice. So I was like, yep, okay. And here I am.
That's incredible.
With a few twists in the way.
Oh, that's so cool. Are you still in touch with many of the people you studied with at CHE?
No. You know, okay. A few of them, a few of them every now and then. Oh, so cool. my really good friend, well, I would say I would call her my best friend. So I met her there and we're still very close. But it's,
I hope that's written, because she said you're her best friend.
Okay, she's one of my best friends. Okay. No, I didn't study with her, and I met her afterwards. But my friend doesn't really practice anymore. She's gone off and she's done other things. So it's not really, there's not really a homeopathy link.
Oh, cool. And speaking of Ren, she was on the show recently as well. And you were mentioned in that episode a few times. I don't know if you've had a chance to listen.
I listened to it. I was a bit embarrassed. I was mentioned far too much. I listened to it because I just didn't want to be repeating, because obviously she specializes in autism as well, and I just didn't want to be repeating the stuff that she was saying. But it turned out my partner was with me, and we were listening to it in my car, and she was like, "Is this the Alan Freestone show?" And I was like, "Oh my goodness." It was very flattering.
Oh, well, you do a lot to promote homeopaths to have busy practices. And unfortunately, there is this very weird culture where I almost feel like homeopaths, I guess, almost take pride in the fact that they struggle to make a living out of homeopathy, or that somehow there's shame in thriving in your practice. I will put my hand up. I was one of those people. And I just never thought that this could actually be something that I could make a really good career out of. And my husband and I joke all the time now, because he said to me, "Oh yeah, you can just do homeopathy as a hobby. It's really funny." And, you know, like a year and a half ago, he left his job and now he's working with me. And it's just so wonderful that we get to do this together. But that's why I love your group that you started, the Homeopathic Practice Building Group and Facebook. And I mean, it's got like 4,500 members or something like that. So that shows you that
it's enormous, far bigger than I ever thought it was going to be.
Yeah, exactly. And shows you the real need that's out there for homeopaths to do well and thrive. Why do you think that is? Or is it just me that have this weird perception that homeopaths don't like to make money?
No, you're completely right.
Or that they think that it's a bad thing to be successful financially in your business.
I think we all probably go through it as part of the journey of building a practice. You have to sort of overcome these delusions. I think I was there. So I worked for 3 or 4 years in Helios Pharmacy in London, which was a lovely experience. I'd probably still be there if they had you had to work at least 2 days a week. That was the thing. I think it's just so that you're up to speed in this with your skill set. They wouldn't let, because I was saying, my practice eventually got too busy, and I was like, it doesn't make economic sense for me to spend 2 days here. And it's tiring. You're on your feet all day, retail environment. It's tiring. I just couldn't justify it. And I was like, can I just do 1 day? I would probably still be there, because it was a really, really lovely place. But just watching that place, you would think like it's famous in the homeopathy circles for, you know, this amazing pharmacy and really high quality remedies. Really ethical business, but most of the people there were struggling, had given up. It has changed now. I like to think I was the first one, but there's been several successful homeopaths have exploded out of the London branch of Helios, and so it was really nice to see. But everybody was stuck in that, and I was like, "Are you?" When I got there, I was like, "Are you? This is crazy." I had no patience. I was trying. I just assumed, "Oh, you know, you'll get." And they didn't even, when we got there, Jan, the manager of the branch, is an absolutely lovely woman, but they didn't really like to promote the homeopaths working in the place. So we had a stand of people's cards, and there was like astrologers and yoga classes and all these things and other homeopaths, but no cards for the homeopaths that worked in the shop. And I was like, this is crazy. So I got rid of all that.
Good. Awesome. I actually had a sales call. We sell these water filters, and I had a sales call from them a while ago. And then the lady who called me is actually a homeopath that sold me this water filter for this company, and she works there 5 days a week. And I was like, my heart was broken that she's a homeopath, all those years spent studying, and then she's selling water filters. I mean, it's like, unfortunately, there's so many homeopaths that do end up falling back on, you know, other jobs to have an income. Like, what do you think we can do to change that? Because that's really, we spend so many hours and so many years and so much money studying to become homeopaths. Why do you think it is that so many homeopaths then just end up not thriving and making a successful business out of this?
We need to join homeopathic practice building.
They do.
Well, there's a leap. Well, okay, so the population that tends to become homeopaths don't tend to be business minded. It's the type of people, it's just you're more like the healer, the empathy, and all this stuff. It's a different type of person. And then there's the gap between graduating and having a practice. There's no apprenticeship bit in the middle. Like a doctor graduates from medical school, and then eventually 10 years later, they become a GP, a general practitioner. There's a whole process where they go from graduate to, okay, you're now a GP. Whereas homeopaths are just, right, you've graduated, go and do it yourself now. And it's a skill set that the type of people that tend to study homeopathy don't necessarily have. Mm. So you never make the leap because you don't have the tools to do it or the confidence to do it. Mm. I had there was a lady that came to work with me briefly, and she was telling me that she'd got a case, she had a patient, she had got a case, and then she spent 12 hours repertorizing after the case. And at the end of it, she still couldn't, she was just trapped in a loop of, so I think a lot, there's people get stuck in that gap. Yes. There's a real problem and they never get out of it. One of the things I would say in homeopathic practice building is you try and prescribe what in the appointment, that's it. You force yourself to.
Yeah.
And you just have to sort of, and it's difficult and awkward and painful and you feel like a fraud and
imposter syndrome.
You're going to have it all and you're going to have to go through it. There's no way around it. Mm. But yeah, there's no structure in place to help people at the minute. So I started HPB a few years ago now, and then it's grown and grown and grown. And Sally and I, or Ren and I, we ran courses for several years, maybe 3 years, where we would take a group of maybe 8 homeopaths that wanted to build a practice. And then we would give them these exercises. We had great fun. We invented this website. Apparently it's offline now, she was telling me, but we invented the worst website we could come up with in the world that was just terrible marketing. It didn't explain what the product was. It was wishy-washy. There was no clear call to action. It was all the mistakes that people made, but it was based on people's homeopaths websites. They are almost universally terrible. There's some brilliant ones now.
Yeah.
There's some really good ones now, but before they were just terrible. And over in this country, the Society of Homeopaths have really done a disservice to homeopaths by bending over to the Advertising Standards Authority and following their guidelines. Mm. The Advertising Standards Authority is a limited company. It's not a government agency.
Wow.
It has no statutory powers. Yeah, they have no powers. They can refer to trading standards, and trading standards have got powers. So that's what happened to me. We can go into that.
Yeah.
But their guidelines were written by skeptics. I can't remember who it was, but one of the well-known skeptics, they drafted their guidelines for the ASA, and it's designed to make your practice unmarketable. So you're not allowed to say anything. You're not allowed to make any claims. You're not allowed to put any testimonials. You're not allowed to. So you end up with these wishy-washy homeopath websites with it, and they're all the same sort of generic flour or mortar and pestle, or it's always the same. Yeah. It would say nothing. It would be like, and the testimonial would be stripped of any context. So it would be like, oh, I went to see Alan and I'm feeling much better now.
Mm.
Or there wouldn't be no mention of, I went to see Alan for my eczema that steroids had failed to treat. Within 3 months, it was all gone. That's a useful testimonial that somebody with eczema would go, oh, I'm going to that person. Mm. So they've deliberately stripped it. So, yeah.
I know. I had some incredible testimonials on my website. And then somebody over here, some of the AHA people said to me as well, I have to remove all the testimonials. And there were some like kick-ass testimonials there. It's incredible.
Did you remove them?
Yeah, I took them down. He was like, yeah, no, you can't have testimonials. You can't tell anyone that you actually heal people.
So the ASA, I basically told them to go and take a running jump. So they referred me to Trading Standards. I knew people, they were sort of informing me by back channels. There was a unit in ASA that were given funding from some shady source to deliberately go after homeopaths and acupuncturists and things like this. Mm. And I was like going to be a test case because I was a sort of prominent homeopath, this guy that's making waves and all the rest of it. So clamped down on him hard. So I actually had a Trading Standards come to my door. But I wasn't there, but they put a little note through the door saying, yeah, call us, please. And then this started like an 18-month ordeal. And luckily, I knew there was rumblings happening. So I had joined HINT, which Homeopathy International. So it's basically a kick-ass homeopathic society that actually has some guts rather than the other ones. So I joined them. And as part of that, you get like a legal advice and things like that. And they were absolutely, I would recommend them. Carol Boyce, she should be somebody you should get on. She's really dynamic, amazing lady. And she's got so many interesting stories, like her adventures in homeopathy. And amazing. But I had an advisor all through all the months of the back and forth with Trading Standards. So they were trying to take me to court. That's that they were trying to get me to be a test case. That's what was going on. And my instinct was just to tell them to go and, but I didn't. I followed the legal advisor's advice, the process. So basically we just argued it point by point by point by point by point. And it was like, you can't do this, you can't do this, you can't do this. And so some of it was so ridiculous. It was like, well, my definition of autism is exactly the same as the NHS on the NHS website. Here's the link. We've just got a word different. Would you like me to change that word? I mean, it was the same. That meant the same as it. And so I just fought every point over and over and over again. And then at the end of it, and it was getting narrower and narrower, and I fought it all off. And then they came back with like 9 new things that were wrong with my website that I had to change. So then I was on the offensive saying, hang on a minute, this is beginning to look like harassment. You're just going to keep changing things to not, they were telling me I had to get rid of my testimonials. And I was like, yeah, but that person's words, not my words. It's the patient's word. If they're using eczema, that's their word. It's not mine. And I wasn't allowed to use it. And I was like, well, hang on a minute. That testimonial was written by a doctor. Can I use that one? Because that's a medical. Surely that one's allowed. So in the end, I didn't change anything on my website. I think I might have had to change a couple of words. It didn't materially affect my website in any way.
Incredible.
And at the end, they said, okay, we're taking no further action. And they closed the case. I fought them to a standstill, and then they closed the case. And I'm so grateful for him, because I think I would have, if it had been me by myself, I would have ended up in the High Court, and it would have been bad for the whole of homeopathy, because I would have been the test case that they could then use to beat everybody else with.
Can I just like give you like a virtual high five? That is awesome. And oh, it's always so annoying, silly things like that, because it takes you away from actually, like it takes you physically away from your clinic, but also mentally away from helping people and actually just doing what you're doing best, which is healing people. And it's such a waste of time and resources for natural medicine that's proven itself for over 200 years, that is not one of the leading causes of death, unlike pharmaceutical drugs, that I just, it frustrates the hell out of me that they can't just leave homeopathy alone. How many more hundred years of successful cases do they want?
I know. Oh, I see what you're doing. You can say, I've had other things as well. I've been reported to children's services. I've been reported to the police, reported to the local council. I've had 2 or 3 hit pieces. I had a lady come to see me from the Telegraphs or one of the big newspapers over here and sat in my clinic with a hidden camera in her handbag and filmed me. Yeah, yeah. And this was a big hit piece. And they had used a tiny, so it was like an hour and a half or something I spent with her. And she was coming for her baby, and I couldn't get it. I was like, but what's wrong? She had come, there was nothing wrong. And I was like, well, I don't know. I think I gave carb or something in the end. But it was a hit piece to try and get me to say stuff about vaccines. And I did say, I was like, they cut off all the bits where I was saying, this has to be your decision. You have to do your own research.
Yeah, of course.
However, personally, this is what I did, or this is, you know, and they used that as the hit piece. And I had, I think The Guardian did a piece, I can't even remember before that, but I've had several of them go after me. And again, they're going after the pop your head up and they try and whack you down. But if you know the game, then it becomes fun. So I was in Turkey on holiday and something came through. It must have been The Guardian one. Something came through. They email you and you say, you've got a right to reply. We're going to publish at 12 o'clock. And they have to, by law, they have to tell you what's the content of the article. So I took that, and luckily I had time. I was in this hotel room, and I took that and dismantled all of their arguments and posted it as a blog post before they released their article to say, oh, this is what's going to happen. I didn't reply to them. I was like, you're not getting anything from me. You don't have good intentions. I'm not engaging with you. And it actually changed they obviously read the blog post, because it actually changed the content of their article and it turned it way down, because I had battered away their silly arguments.
Wow. Well, you've made it when the trolls are out to get you. That's where you're really making waves. And that's why I also feel that, you know, there's the stuff happening with the FDA in America and the therapeutic products bill in New Zealand, like things feel like it's heating up again. The heat's never really dropped in the past 200 plus years that homeopathy's been around. But if we weren't making a difference, or weren't actually having an effect on people, then there wouldn't be these skeptics out there trying to get rid of us. So obviously we're making enough noise. So that's a good thing.
There's a good quote. It's, you know, you're over the target when you're taking flack. It's like
exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly right. Holy moly. And you're still going and still have a smile on your face and still helping your clients. Now, talk to us a little bit about your specialties. What's your area of expertise? I mean, I know, but our listeners don't. So share that with them.
So I specialize in treating children with autism. And then I've got a sort of other specialism treating PANS, pandas. So sort of immune issues. So kind of like where an immune system's has gone wrong, so they've maybe got a bacterial infection or a viral infection, and the immune system has not dealt appropriately with it, and they end up with weird neurological symptoms. So there's a lot of that around. You wouldn't believe the numbers of that. So I had to subspecialize in that because there was so many of my autism patients also were having these autoimmune issues. So I had to figure out how to treat that. And I must say, I wanted some of the things. I wanted to say I wrote some notes for this. I haven't used any of them. But it's, I think homeopathy's got some magic, obviously, to it. But I think nosodes are one of the magical things of homeopathy. Nothing else, no other healing modality can touch those things. The nosodes are magical.
Do you want to explain that a little bit for our listeners that are not homeopaths?
Yeah, sorry. So a nosode is a homeopathic remedy made from a disease product. So it could be a bacteria or virus, fungus, sample of cancer or things like this. And I think of it like it's you're informing the body, hey, you've got a problem with that thing. So let's say a kid has had a strep throat, and then ever since that they've got weird tics and OCD behaviors have gone absolutely crazy. You could give a homeopathic remedy made from strep to re-teach the body how to deal appropriately with that thing. I had a case and it was treating two boys, and I've been treating them for years with very slow progress. Sometimes it's amazing and sometimes it's really, but it was the mum. She had a cesarean section 15 years ago and it had never healed. It got infected with MRSA, MRSA, the antibiotic resistant strep, and it had never healed. And she had had multiple rounds of antibiotics. She had had cut away, sewed up, skin graft, they had tried everything. It was still there weeping 15 years after.
Wow.
MRSA, nosode, fixed.
Amazing.
Like fixed. 2 years, so that was about 2 years ago, still fixed. And it was painful and it was weeping. And so we went through different strengths. We started at 30C and then 200C, 1M10M. And it healed over first, but it was still but she could still feel there was pain underneath. She could feel it healing underneath. And then we went up again and then it was even better and then up again. And flawless skin. It's like, that's magical.
It's so satisfying.
Yeah. So I have treated about 1,800 cases of autism now. I use what I call homeopathic detox a lot. So some people might know it as cease therapy, but I call it homeopathic detox because it explains what it does. So that is very similar to nosodes. That is using a remedy is made from a toxin to encourage the body to remove that toxin. And another magical thing of homeopathy, there's many. It's unbelievable. The results from this it's sort of commonplace. You forget that it's, oh, wow, yeah, nothing else can do this. This stuff should be known about everywhere. It's unbelievable. So I use that a lot. So literally, I build a timeline and let's say the kid regressed, was developing completely normally, and then regressed after an MMR vaccine. Now, I'm not saying all autism is because of vaccines or MMR vaccines, because that's certainly not the case, but it's pretty common. I've seen so many cases where this is true. So you would literally give MMR as a homeopathic remedy back to that person. And what you hope is going to happen is they would have a healing response. You would get a detox reaction and then improvement, permanent improvements in symptoms. And so that's been my bread and butter now for however long I've been doing it, let's say 10 years, something like that. Yeah, and it's amazing.
I ask you something, especially with the MMR vaccine, something I've noticed in my clinic. The first time I heard it a few years ago, I was really surprised. And then it's happened so many times since that I'm kind of expecting people to say this to me, that children are more affectionate after you've done the MMR vaccine with them. Have you ever had that feedback?
Yes. Yes. But I had one this week. I seen that, and he's now got empathy, and he's now got.
Mm.
Yeah, but it's not all not just MMR. I've had it with other things as well.
No, I with others as well. But I've most often had it with MMR, but definitely with the others as well. That it's they come back and they're like, my child's so affectionate. I'm just getting so many cuddles. You know, they never used to cuddle me. They never ever used to seek it out before. Now, not only do they not push me away when I come to cuddle them, but they come and seek it out.
Yeah.
Like the first time I heard that, I was like, really? A homeopathic detox can make your child more affectionate? Like, I have a little theory about that, and hear me out on this one. I've got nothing to base this on. This is just my own idea. So I always try to put myself in the person's shoe, and I'm trying to imagine this little baby that's a year old. So they've kind of been outside of the womb for a year. They're kind of getting the hang of this earth thing and mom and dad. And then they built obviously trust and love the people around them. And then they get taken to this cold place with these strange people that stick a needle in them that hurt. And then after that, they experience possibly brain inflammation or they become really sick. And then I can see how you can withdraw from somebody that you love that goes and hurts you. And then you'd never feel, hey?
I trusted you.
Yeah. And then you don't feel the same after that. I can imagine that you'd be a little bit pissed off. And then, I don't know. I just, like I said, this is just my.
Or it's damaged the thymus gland and that's the heart chakra.
Yeah.
The connection there as well.
I like that one too. The thing is, like, we are not making this stuff up. We have random people that we've never met before that come for a consultation with us. You know, so I might have met this person for 1 hour for consultation. I give them remedies. They come back and they tell me their child is more affectionate. So, what am I supposed to make of that when person after person comes and tells me that? They're not all lying.
Yeah. What the flip side of that is, I've become more and more cynical about, what would you call them, institutions, let's say, especially during COVID. It was just that was the final thing. But the number of people that I have treated that, because when you see, as you say, you see the pattern over and over and over again.
Yeah.
You see a lot of, and the number of people that their kid regressed and they went back to the pediatrician and they said, my kid regressed after that vaccine and they've been dismissed.
Exactly.
It's absolutely criminal because that's just the ones I'm seeing. That pediatrician must hear that over and over and over again. There's nowhere they're not hearing that. How can they,
how can they sleep at night? No, that's what I always like. I'm like, how can you day in, day out, ignore the things that patients are telling you? And, you know, these mothers are crying in the clinic when they tell us that their child regressed. How can you have that crying mother, several clients day in, day out, tell you the same thing and try to make out like they're crazy? Like, I don't understand the type of person that does that. Like, how could you do that? How could you sleep at night?
It's amazing. I just find it baffling, you know. And I think, like, as I was saying to you while we were chatting before this, I'm into Bitcoin. But I think homeopathy's connected to all of this. We're at this stage, like Ray Dalio is a very successful hedge fund manager guy, billionaire guy, and he's written books about the changing world order and ends of empires happening, and, you know, the rise of China, the fall of the US, and it's just... it's patterns that have happened over and over and over and over again. Currencies collapsing and all the rest of it. And we just seem to be at this stage of trust in institutions is crumbling. Mm. But also the ethics of people in the institutions seems to be crumbling. Like, look at politicians. They just, in the past, if a politician was caught lying, they would possibly resign in shame, or there'd be some. They just do it openly. It's everything seems to be just like, would you trust the WHO anymore? You know, the World Health Organization, UN, all of it's becoming untrustworthy. Mm. And I think homeopathy's here as this, I always think of it like, I've said I'm going to write a book one day called Open Source Medicine. So it's kind of like software, open source software. That's eating the world, like the free and open source software.
Oh my gosh, all the open source AI stuff at the moment is blowing my mind.
Everything's everything's going open source because you don't trust. I don't trust what's in your little black box. It has to be open. Anybody can see the code. Mm. Anybody can take it and change it. And it's just like homeopathy. It's like anybody. There's no patented remedies. It's everything's open. Your patient, I've prescribed you Lachesis. You can go and read Lachesis and think if it's real or not. It seems like a medicine for the age of collapsing institutions. We don't. So there's a thing in Bitcoin that says don't trust, verify. So you don't trust. I don't trust you. I can verify. I can run my node and verify that that money has been sent from there to there. I don't have to trust anybody. So it's kind of the same thing. Yeah.
It is very open source because if you even think about, I can buy a remedy from a homeopathic pharmacy, but then I can copy that remedy and sell it to anybody else. Or I can make a homeopathic combination remedy and another person, and many, many homeopaths have, can copy that combination remedy and sell it themselves. So like it's very open source in that, like there's nothing to hide. Like any of us can actually copy any of anybody else's stuff. If you want to just talk about the remedy side of things.
Brilliant. And also, so many people that come to me have completely lost trust in the doctors. So you cannot do the old fashioned homeopathy way of saying, "Oh, I'm giving you a remedy, but I'm not telling you what it is." You can't do it. They don't get me started on that. Be open. You have to tell them. You have to explain this is what this is for, and this is what might happen, because they have lost trust in the institution. So you have to be. You can't say, "Oh yeah, just take this little pill." I'm not going to say what it is. It's not appropriate for this age.
I was really concerned when I was in a lecture recently, and they discussed that sometimes it's worth not telling the client what you're giving them. And I shouldn't be shocked that we're even still talking about this. But I then did a poll in my private Facebook group saying, "Would you want to know what your remedy is, or would you not want to know?" And there were 140 people that voted on the poll, and of that, one person, it's actually a lady that works for me, said that she doesn't want to know, but all the others, and somebody added an extra one there that said, "I want to know, and I want to know why and what it is." So doesn't just want to know, they want to. And, you know, that's like 140 yes, one no. So any homeopath listening to this, if you are giving still remedies to your clients and not telling them what it is, you are damaging the reputation of homeopathy. Please don't do it. Just don't.
I know. Again, it's sort of the old-fashioned doctor up there and patient down there thing.
Exactly.
You can't do it. You have to meet people. So I tell people it's like a negotiation or we come to an agreement. It's like, this is what I would like to do. Mm. We could do this or we could do this. What do you think? And we will negotiate to come. So it might be, I'm not ready to do that yet. Mm. He's at school. He's just settled in. I don't want to. It's like, okay, so let's do something else until we're ready, you know, until the summer holidays, until we're ready to do that. So you have to sort of meet the patient as an equal rather than being some sort of hierarchical.
Exactly. But also I think some people they don't want to take responsibility for their health. They like the idea of somebody else telling them what they have to do. And then they're never truly healing, because true health is when you are taking responsibility for your own health. So I guess there are a subset of patients who do just want to go to somebody and have them tell them what to do, but that's not a true healing relationship. A true healing relationship is where you, as the patient, are empowered in the healing process. And like you said, it's an equal partnership. So I realize there are some people out there who do like that, the guru and student type relationship, but that's not where true healing comes from.
Yeah. Yeah. I wrote a little quote down. I should have researched his name because I'm for this and I didn't. But he's a Canadian homeopath and he's written several books on nozodes. Maybe you would know who it is.
Oh, Louis Klein.
Yeah. Ah, yes. Thank you.
That's all right.
But he has a quote in one of the books. I'm back to nozodes again. But he says homeopathy. This quote's not exact because it's
paraphrasing.
Homeopathy can cure the effects of a disease, even if the infective agent is no longer present. Mm. Such a powerful thing. I like treating people coming to me where, let's say they've had, I don't know, Epstein-Barr virus or something like that, and they've been knocked for six, and 10 years has gone past, they have clear symptoms of that thing. Mm. However, all the conventional tests are saying, nope, there's no titers, there's nothing active, you're no good. But they're going, I am still ill from Epstein-Barr. Once again, homeopathy is magical. It's like, yeah, we can fix that. It's like you're, it's like an energetic imprint of Epstein-Barr. It's almost like PTSD. I sort of think of it like stuck, like a, yeah, you're just healing that little bit of imprint with the nozodes. Yeah, I just wanted to say that because I just think it's a, such a great statement. You know,
you can talk about nozodes as long as you want. I am also a huge, huge fan. I actually just had a beautiful Epstein-Barr virus testimonial last week from somebody who did the whole, you know, detox series up to 10M. And she's actually asked me to order the 50M for her as well. So she's going to take the Epstein-Barr and the 50M, which I haven't actually prescribed before. She'll be my first, but she's been a client that's been with me for 4 or 5 years. And she's so in tune with homeopathy, understands it so deeply. So she is one of those clients that will say to me, look, I feel like I'm ready for this remedy. Or can you get me this remedy? I want to experience that. And because we're in close contact, I love that she's taken such responsibility for her health. And now next year, she's going to be studying, or I think maybe this year, actually, she's going to be studying to become a homeopath. So that's my jam. Like, I love that stuff. I love it. I love people who are empowered, who want to take responsibility for their health, who are doing their research, asking the questions. And, you know, if they're ready and they want to take the next step and help others, it's just beautiful.
Yeah, it's like a growing, like a ascending spiral where you're affecting people and then they will end up affecting people and then they will, and it gets bigger and bigger.
Well, you told us a story at the start of the, oh, before we started recording, about one of your clients has gone on to study homeopathy because you had such good success with her son, hey?
Yes, yes, exactly, yeah. So she interviewed me for a podcast earlier this week. That was, yeah, that's amazing. There's been several that have gone on to study homeopathy after it. It's really good. Which brings us on to, well, sort of connected to what we were saying earlier about the struggle of people to build a practice, but it also brings on to my new project called the Hahnemann Clinic.
So, Alan, tell us a little bit about your new project, the Hahnemann Clinic.
Okay, thank you for the introduction. So I have wanted, there's always a desire to build, you know, it's just a human thing. So part of my selfish reason for starting the homeopathic practice building was to find homeopaths that wanted to be busy to collaborate and work together. And I became a little cynical about it because, as I said earlier, Ren and I were running these courses. So people, we had sort of 8 or 10 people on these courses and they would run for 6 months. We did it for a few years, this is maybe 3 years. And they had to pay for it. And even then, and quite, you know, it was quite deliberately expensive to make them value the, to make them do it. Cause when you give something free, they, people they just wouldn't finish it because it's going to be uncomfortable. You're going to have to break through and yeah. And usually there was one person out of the group that would go on and build a successful practice. And it wasn't that our stuff worked. It still works. You can find it all for free on Homeopathic Practice Building, the Facebook group. You can join it and you can get it all for free. The processes work, and it's a very similar to you figuring out what works with in marketing and how to build an effective website and how to, you know, like all that stuff. Collecting people's email addresses and, you know, all that stuff. And they would self-sabotage almost the whole group, or every time we did it was self-sabotaging at some point and dropping out. And it just made me cynical. I was like, I've put energy into this and I'm not getting energy out. So I thought I would love to build it, to have a multi practitioner practice and build something, but I just couldn't find homeopaths to do it. And I sort of parked the idea as maybe that's just it. Like 95% of people that are studying homeopathy don't really want a busy practice. So it would be like trying to herd cats. It would be like I'd be using all my energy instead of building a business. I'd be trying to bring them up to be motivated and, you know. And then Mary Greensmith, who you've had on, she was actually on one of our courses, but we can't take the glory for that. She's already a successful businesswoman. She knew how to build a business. She just needed a few little tweaks on engagement on social media. That's all she was needing. So we didn't create Mary. She was already successful. But seeing her building homeopathy 24/7 and all the busy homeopaths that have come from that, I had to revisit my delusion and say, okay, that was my own delusion. It wasn't true. There is homeopaths out there that want to build a practice. So I've revisited my desire to build something bigger than myself. So I come up with the name, the Hahnemann Clinic. It was going to be like the Hahnemann Center or something like that, but I wanted to be more, no, it should say clinic. It should say it's not wishy-washy. It's saying what we're doing. And my idea is for it to be a center of excellence. So like a homeopathic center of excellence, that's the idea. So you think of, you're treating autism cases, Ren's treating, I'm treating autism, lots of different people. Mm. And we're all isolated in our own little offices. Mm. And we're not collaborating. Mm. And we're not sharing data. And we're not figuring out, testing things. It's insane. Like if there was a hospital and they specialized in knee surgery or something like that, that would be surgeons that really knew and collaborated and were better because they were in a group. They're doing a more effective job than if they're all individual. It's kind of the same thing. So, and I'm sort of thinking of like the Mayo Clinic in America, you know, it's this famous clinic. If you type in, if you're looking, somebody comes to you with some strange illness and you're busy Googling, what on earth is that? And very often like the search results will be their page in the Mayo Clinic because they're just really on it. They're really good allopathic center. So I thought, well, why not? Why shouldn't there be a homeopathic, as these institutions are crumbling around us, this thing needs to be there to be a beacon for homeopathic excellence. So that was my idea. So I thought we'll do it in, so a bit like a hospital, you'll have specialisms. So you'll have the autism team, the cancer team, the there could be hundreds of these teams. So what I'm going to do first is I'm going to build the autism team just because that's my specialty, and create a group of homeopaths that are going to that'll get really busy. And then once we've refined all the back end stuff, then we can just use that model to replicate, to do other things. So I was looking at the Mayo Clinic. I was thinking, I wonder how big it is. There's 53,000 people work in it. 53,000 people. Unbelievable. So like the potential for, there could be 1,000 homeopaths treating autism, it wouldn't be enough. And that's just one specialism. Never mind fertility. There could be another 1,000 doing fertility. Yeah. Like, and on and on and on and on.
Constipation, these 5,000 homeopaths. It seems to be one.
Say again,
constipation. I think you need 5,000 homeopaths. It's such a big, oh my gosh, treat so much constipation. Yeah. It's a huge thing. Lots of people blocked up.
So that's my idea. So I've had a few open conversations on homeopathic practice building to talk to other homeopaths about my ideas. And it's funny how the same ideas come up with homeopaths. It's like, well, we shouldn't be specializing, the whole arguments you hear over and over again. I've paused it because I wanted to build a website and a brand and a logo and all that stuff. So that's done or almost done now. So now I'm happy to. So I think when this is published, the website will be live. So I would imagine you just type in the Hahnemann Clinic. I think it's .com. I think I've bought that domain. That should be live when it's not live yet, but it should be live when.
Amazing. Yeah. This will probably come out end of March somewhere, I'd say.
Yeah. So it'll be, yes. I'm just finalizing with the Lucy, the lady who's very kind of a homeopath, who's very kindly been building it. She's so really creative.
That's amazing, Alan. And it's actually funny that we're having this chat today, because this morning I had a meeting with the four homeopaths on my team, and we started back our weekly Friday meetings. And today's meeting was just because, you know, a couple of us have got young kiddies, and so we were just waiting for school to go back. So today was our first one for the new year. And I was just saying to the ladies, that we're going to have a structure with our meeting every week, like sharing cases for the first 10 minutes. And then after that, sharing something new that we've learned. And then after that, maybe a new book that we're reading or a course that we're doing, so that there's a structure to it every week. And what was cool is after that meeting, I had a meeting with 8 new homeopaths that are most of them are clients of mine who are now studying to become homeopaths. Wow. So it was a really fun day today. It was just one fun meeting after the next. But there's so often that homeopaths work on their own from a home clinic, and I have done that too. So I'll be the first person to put up my hand. And it gets really lonely and it gets really hard because, I mean, luckily we have Facebook groups that we can bounce ideas off, homeopathic Facebook groups, where there's only professional homeopaths that are in the group. So you can discuss cases in there. But it's not the same as just being able to pick up the phone and call the homeopaths on your team and bounce some ideas off. And it was actually really cool because this morning, one of the homeopaths on the team had a pretty bad sinus infection. So we were actually giving her some remedy suggestions and, you know, threw a few out there that she hadn't thought of. But I had the same thing a year ago after I had my appendix operation. I had this thing and I couldn't think of what remedy to give. One of the ladies on the team gave me a suggestion. Within half an hour, my problem was fixed that I had for 2 weeks. And so just having that close knit. having that close group of homeopaths that, and we all do different professional development courses. And so we all have a slightly different way of looking at it. And I think every homeopath has their bias of remedies that they really like. You know, like one homeopath might prescribe loads of nozodes and another one might prescribe loads of butterfly remedies like myself or whatever. So being constantly in conversation with other homeopaths kind of just helps you to keep an open mind and stay on top of things and bounce ideas off. Like it's so easy. Actually, one of the homeopaths this morning said she's having so many skin cases at the moment and it's driving her batty. And I'm like, well, just bounce those ideas off us. Come and talk to us about those cases. So instead of sitting there feeling stuck, just go and, you know, they say problem shared is a problem halved. So I love what you're doing, creating that sense of community, learning from each other and specializing.
But also if you like back to the knee surgery idea, if one of the surgeons is getting better results than the rest, they'll be figuring out why and then copying what they're doing. So it's just in just the same way, it's like this is working, this protocol is working better than ours. And so you're lifting it, everybody's being lifted up by it.
Exactly.
And the other thing, I haven't figured out how to do this yet, but the other thing would be providing that apprenticeship from new graduate to confident homeopath there. So I'm hoping that the Hahnemann Clinic will also be able to do that. I don't know how it's going to work yet. And also I treat people from all over the world, and I have people in Egypt and people in Pakistan and other developing countries. And sometimes people were coming to me and they were like, I can't afford your fees. What, you know, I'm desperate. My child, you know, and autism is a really desperate situation. So I was treating these people and either not charging them or charging like a really big discount. And then I was feeling resentful for it because I was like, I'm living in the first world. It's not sustainable. I can't pay. So then I have a group of homeopaths in Egypt. I think I told you about this last time we were chatting. And then I have another group in Pakistan. So I thought, well, I'll teach them the homeopathic detox methods and they can take those cases. So it means that I don't feel guilty, is that patients can get help that way. So I was also thinking that we can do that in the Hahnemann Clinic, where there can be you go to see that doctor in Pakistan and she will be charging the relevant rates for that area. So we can fix the problem and charge for the market that the market can withstand.
I was actually just today, because the students were saying today, you know, they don't know what they're going to do with their clinic hours. And I was like, well, firstly, obviously come to me because I would love for you to come and sit in a clinic. And then I was thinking, because I would love to be able to offer homeopathy to more people who are on a lower income. And I was kind of playing with the idea. So I'm just kind of like spurting it out. I haven't actually told anyone about this yet. But just this morning, I was thinking maybe I could do the case, like get some volunteers who can't afford. And I know there's other places doing that as well. I think Hilary Dorian has a clinic that does that. So I'm taking the case free of charge, but the students pay a fee to sit in so that they get their clinic hours. And that, say, if you've got like 8 students on the Zoom call sitting in and they give like $10 each or whatever, then they get in their clinic hours and that person gets a consultation for free and my time is still paid for. Or there's something along like those lines, like just being a little bit clever so we can still be paid for our expertise. Like, you know, professional development costs so much. Like I've just paid $5,500 for a master practitioner course that I'm doing at the moment. So I have to do several hundred consultations, which are basically just to cover the cost of this professional development that I'm doing. So I think a lot of people don't think about that when they go to a homeopath. And homeopathic books are ridiculously expensive. Just yesterday, I was carrying a bunch of books from the clinic to bring them home. And as I was carrying them, I'm thinking, I am carrying $1,000 worth of books in my hands right now. Like, homeopathy books are so expensive. So there has to be, it'd be nice to get to find a happy medium where we are being paid for our expertise and the students have got cheap way of getting their clinic training hours and lower income people are able to get a free consultation as well. But it's always tricky with a free thing. I used to do a lot of free cases when I first started and I just never had good results with those because people just didn't value it. And now I just don't do free consultations at all. I will throw free remedies in for people here and there. And I give loads of free help in my Facebook group and acute free advice and like just acute stuff, but I don't do... It's an energy exchange. And actually, when you do those free consultations, it's not, I lie. I've got two families that I treat free of charge, but I have said to them, you need to, this is a commitment, this is an energy exchange. So you need to commit to your prescription. You need to commit to coming back regularly and you have to pay for the remedies yourself. So there is a bit of an energy exchange. So I have a couple of families I do that with, but I mean, we need to have things like that in place as well, where we can help people on lower income and help the students.
But I think at the minute, like when the state is taking over 50% of your income when you work out VAT and all the extra taxes you have to pay for health services that are failing, I don't think homeopaths should then be feeling guilty about charging people 20 quid to come and see them. There's a charity in the UK, the National Autism Society. What do you think their annual turnover is? £100 million. And I would argue that I am doing more, having more benefit for autistic people in the UK than they are. And you go to their website and it's the same old nonsense about, oh, this is a lifelong condition. There's no treatments. You can have some therapies, blah, blah, blah. That's all they offer. I'm sort of looking at it from a different angle. And I'm part of the Hahnemann Clinic thing also is, it would end up with a reputation and perhaps published research that you could then go, we can do these results. Here's the published research. Give us some of that grant money, you know, so the clinic gets the part of that 100 million. Jeepers, what you could do with £1 million or £2 million of the number of people you could treat, it would be incredible. But why? That's how we should be thinking, because there's so much money being misallocated to ineffective things like that, when it should be going to homeopathy.
I'm just trying, I'm looking at my list here, who it was that I recently interviewed, but I think maybe it was Judy Ann McNamara that was telling me that they actually got funding from the Red Cross to go and do work with the fire victims or somebody like that? And then also to do homeopathic consultations for, you know, the first responders, because after the fires, all of those first responders had their own set of trauma and things to deal with. And the Red Cross saw the results that they were getting and ended up giving them money, giving these homeopaths money, which is, I completely agree. I think the work that we do is incredibly valuable and it's time that is recognized financially and we can be saving the taxpayers millions and millions of dollars. So
I remember when I was working in Helios, there was an elderly lady and she came in and she had been to the London Homeopathic Hospital on the NHS when it was still around. But they had changed it. So they were just squeezing it. So at the end, she had osteoarthritis, something like that, you know, like a degenerative thing that can be treated, ameliorated, but you're not curing this. It's just, but they were now only allowed 3 appointments. That was all you got at the hospital, and then they had actually sent her to Helios and said, look, you need this, buy this Rustox Ruta cream and buy, you know. And I thought, how short-sighted of the NHS, because basically she could, and it was helping. I was talking to her and she was saying, the symptoms are much better on the homeopathic remedies. So what would happen is, luckily, hopefully she's continued coming to Helios, but what would happen is she would have been spat back into the system. She'd have gone back to her GP with her osteoarthritis symptoms. She would then have been referred to a consultant specialist. Then she would have had whatever scans. Then she would have, that would have cost far more money to the system and been less effective than simply saying, oh yes, have some Rustox and Ruta. That's what I'm saying. Misallocation of capital is so huge. I don't think we should be feeling guilty about taking some money for our expertise, you know?
No, absolutely. So, Alan, are you still taking on new clients?
I am, yes. Yes.
You are? And how can people get hold of you?
So the easiest way is my website. So it's just alanfreestone.com. I'm also around on Facebook. I have a Facebook group with almost 8,000 people in it called Effective Autism Treatment. So you can go on there as well. That can be quite nice for people because everybody in the group has, well, there's a few homeopaths there. But the rest are parents of autistic kids, and you can ask them about their experiences. A lot of them are my patients or my former patients or have done other forms of biomedical healing. So there's a real wealth of knowledge for people to come and ask questions. Otherwise, yeah, just go to my website. I do a free 15-minute introduction appointment for people. That it's good for people to just come and say hello to me. We can see whether we're going to be a good fit. And then if we want to move forward, then they can then go and book a full consultation with me. Yeah.
Amazing. And is there any final message that you want to leave our listeners with?
Apart from nozodes.
Use nozodes.
Well, the homeopaths see more patients. That's the solution to everything. See more patients. Underconfident, see more patients. Not making enough money, see more patients. Don't have any testimonials for your website, see more patients. It's the solution to everything. And for the listeners that are thinking of going to a homeopath, yeah, go to it. It's magic.
It has been so much fun chatting with you. That hour just whizzed by. I feel like I could have easily chatted another couple of hours. No worries.
I haven't even gone through all my notes. I don't know what.
Oh, you'll just have to come back then. Thank you so much for your time today. I really appreciate it.
Lovely to speak to you, Judy. Thank you.